The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Chapter 18. The Invisible Man Sleeps. Exhausted and wounded as the Invisible Man was, he refused to accept Kemp's word that his freedom should be respected. He examined the two windows of the bedroom, drew up the blinds, and opened the sashes to confirm Kemp's statement that a retreat by them would still be possible. Outside, the night was very quiet and still, and the new moon was setting over the down. Then he examined the keys of the bedroom and the two dressing-room doors to satisfy himself that these could also be made an assurance of freedom. Finally, he expressed himself satisfied. He stood on the hearthrug, and Kemp heard the sound of a yawn. "I am sorry," said the Invisible Man, "but I cannot tell you all I have done tonight. But I am worn out. It's grotesque, no doubt. It's horrible. But believe me, Kemp, in spite of your arguments this morning, it is quite a possible thing. I have made a discovery. I meant to keep it to myself. I can't. I must have a partner, and you, we can do such things. But tomorrow... Now, Kemp, I feel as though I must sleep or perish."
Kemp stood in the middle of the room, staring at the headless garment. "I suppose I must leave you," he said. "It's incredible. Three things like this happening, overturning all my preconceptions, wouldn't make me insane, but it's real. Is there anything more I can get you?"
"Only bid me good night," said Griffin.
"Good night," said Kemp, and shook an invisible hand. He walked sideways to the door. Suddenly the dressing gown walked quickly towards him.
"Understand me," said the dressing gown. "No attempts to hamper me or capture me or..."
Kemp's face changed a little.
"I thought I gave you my word," he said.
Kemp closed the door softly behind him, and the key was turned upon him forthwith. Then, as he stood with an expression of passive amazement on his face, the rapid feet came to the door of the dressing room, and that too was locked.
Kemp slapped his brow with his hand. "Am I dreaming? Is the world gone mad, or have I..."
He laughed and put his hand to the locked door.
"Bought out of my own bedroom by a flagrant absurdity," he said.
He walked to the head of the staircases, turned, and stared at the locked doors.
"It's fact," he said. He put his fingers to his slightly bruised neck. "Undeniable fact, but..."
He shook his head hopelessly and turned and went downstairs.
He lit the dining room lamp, got out a cigar, and began pacing the room, ejaculating. Now and then he would argue with himself.
"Invisible," he said.
"Is there such a thing as an invisible animal? In the sea, yes. Thousands, millions. All the larvae.
All the larvae. All the little napillae and the tyrrhenius, all the microscopic things, the jellyfish. In the sea there are more things invisible than visible. I never thought of that before. And in the ponds, too, others little pond-life things, specks of colourless translucent jelly. But in the air, no.
It can't be.
But after all, why not?
If a man was made of glass, he would still be visible."
His meditation became profound. The bulk of three cigars had passed into the invisible or diffused as white ash over the carpet before he spoke again. Then it was merely an exclamation. He turned aside, walked out of the room, and went into his little consulting room and lit the gas there. It was a little room, because Dr. Kemp did not live by practice, and in it were the day's newspapers. The morning's paper lay carelessly opened and thrown aside. He caught it up, turned it over, and read the account of a strange story from Iping, that the mariner at Port Stowe had spelt over so painfully to Mr. Marvel. Kemp read it swiftly.
"Wrapped up," said Kemp, "disguised, hiding it. No one seems to have been aware of his misfortune. What the devil is his game?"
He dropped the paper, and his eye went seeking.
"Ah,"
he said, and caught up the St. James Gazette, lying folded up as it had arrived.
"Now we shall get the truth,"
said Dr. Kemp. He rent the entire paper open. A couple of columns confronted him.
"An entire village in Sussex goes mad," was the heading.
"Good heavens," said Kemp, reading eagerly an incredulous account of the events in Iping of the previous afternoon that have already been described. Over the leaf, the report in the morning the paper had been reprinted. He reread it. "Ran through the streets, striking right and left. Jaffers insensible, Mr. Huxter in great pain, still unable to describe what he saw. Painful humiliation, vicar. Woman ill with terror, windows smashed. This extraordinary story, probably a fabrication. Too good not to print. Cum grano."
He dropped the paper and stared blankly out in front of him. "Probably a fabrication."
He caught up the paper again and reread the whole business.
"But when does the tramp come in? Why the deuce was he chasing a tramp?"
He sat down abruptly on a surgical bench.
"He's not only invisible," he said, "but he's mad. Homicidal."
When dawn came to mingle in its pallor with the lamplight and cigar smoke of the dining room, Kemp was still pacing up and down, trying to grasp the incredible. He was altogether too excited to sleep. His servants descended sleepily, discovered him, and were inclined to think that overstudy had worked this ill on him. He gave them extraordinary but quite explicit instructions to lay breakfast for two in the Belvedere study, and then to confine themselves to the basement and ground floor. Then he continued to pace the dining room until the morning's paper came. That had much to say and little to tell beyond the confirmation of the evening before, and a very badly written account of another remarkable tale from Port Burdock. This gave Kemp the essence of happenings at the Jolly Cricketers, and the name of Marvel. "He has made me keep with him 24 hours," Marvel testified. Certain minor facts were added to the Iping story, notably the cutting of the village telegraph wire. But there was nothing to throw light on the connection between the Invisible Man and the tramp, for Mr. Marvel had supplied no information about the three books, or the money with which he was lined. The incredulous tone had vanished, and a shoal of reporters and inquirers were already at work elaborating the matter. Kemp read every scrap of the report, and sent his housemaid out to get every one of the morning papers she could. These also he devoured. "He's invisible," he said, "and it reads like rage growing to mania. The things he may do, the things he may do, and he's upstairs free as the air. What ought I to do? For instance, would it be a breach of faith if... No." He went to the little untidy desk in the corner and began a note. He tore this up half-written and wrote another. He read it over and considered it. Then he took an envelope and addressed it to Colonel Ardai, Port Burdock. The Invisible Man awoke, even as Kemp was doing this. He woke in an evil temper, and Kemp, alert for every sound, heard his pattering feet rush suddenly across the bedroom overhead. Then a chair was flung over, and the washhand stumbler smashed. Kemp hurried upstairs and rapped eagerly. End of chapter 18. Read by David Russell. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.